you some games. We stand naked on this show. Grow a pair. That shows a very infantile character by me, doesn't it? The low expectations should really piss these guys off. It's all a lie. It's all a lie.
Buccaneers fans, the sage of Tampa Bay sports is back. Another edition of the Ira Kaufman podcast starring the Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the King of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton, Ira Kaufman. Lee D. Kemper of JoeBucksFan.com is here. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. And at Bill Curry Ford, you can custom order a vehicle and get $500, a $500 gift card just for doing it from GM Sean Sullivan, the general manager at Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. Concierge service is so easy online if you want the help. No deposit is required to order a vehicle, 10-year roadside assistance, and the inventory is flowing. BillCurryFord.com, BillCurryFord.com, and shop there first. That's what you have to do. Lee, Ira, and I all have our vehicles from Bill Curry Ford. Ira was there this week. They are fantastic. BillCurryFord.com. And Big Storm Beer, what a Memorial Day weekend it was, Ira. A lot of people drinking Big Storm Beer. They had that buy one, get one free offer. That made a lot of fans happy at the tap rooms in Odessa, Clearwater, Cape Coral, Orlando at the Amway Center. And check out all the live music at the Ybor location. Of course, the food is flowing at Big Storm Brewery. Going to be a great summer. Buy Big Storm in your local Publix. And of course, they've got all the varieties at the website to check out, bigstormbrewery.com. Get to the tap room today and follow them on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Big Storm Brewing, Orlando, Clearwater. All the locations have their own social media, bigstormbrewery.com. And our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration Sage. Hurricane season, it's pretty much, we're going to say it's here, Ira. Storm damage, that means you call Florida's Elite Restoration immediately. 24-7, they'll come out, give you a free look, free assessment, free evaluation of what's happening. They'll use their equipment, and they're great for so many other emergencies as well. Mold, licensed mold remediation specialists. We'll talk more about them later, Sage. And they'll give you $500 too, just for mentioning Ira or Joe Bucksfan when you call. And if you eventually move forward with their service, then you'll get that $500 back toward your deductible. Paying cash to restore your property, then they'll just give you $500 back. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Get there now so you're prepared later. Ira, a lot of going on in its own little way with the Buccaneers here as we march toward June. First, how are you? How was your weekend? And what's going on?
Steve, I got a couple of stories for our beautiful audience over here. One of the guys I played tennis with invited us over to his house to celebrate Memorial Day. Had about 25 people there. A lot of food, desserts, everything. When we got there, he said, "What are you drinking?" Well, of course, you know the answer what I said. "You got any Big Storm?" He didn't have it. I said, "Shit, shameful. Ron, that's shameful. You got to have Big Storm beer for your people. You need a variety of beers from Big Storm. Every one of them is sensational." He told me next time he'll make sure he's got it. So that's number one. I asked for Big Storm, Lee, and I don't get it. That's a downer already before the party even starts. Number two, and, you know, I got an admission to make. You know, we stand naked on this show, and Lee, you don't even want to think about that as far as I'm concerned. But we do. We stand naked. So, Steve, I got home last night. Game 7, Celtics Heat, Eastern Conference Finals. Guys, on the surface, I got no dog in this fight. My Sixers have been done for 2 weeks. What do I care about Miami and Boston? Well, I got home, and it was like the start of the second quarter, and I put the game on, and I'm watching it. And instead of just, you know, looking for a good basketball game, I find myself, "Go, Miami, go! Go, Heat, go!" And why? Number one, that's the team that knocked Philly out, so I'm going to root against them. But even more importantly, and I should be ashamed of saying this, gentlemen, should be ashamed. I got to grow up a little bit, grow a pair. But you know the story. My brother's a Celtics fan. That's why I became a Sixer fan. We're talking about 55 years of rooting for teams. Growing up in New York, we never rooted for a New York team. Not one. Nothing. Yankees, Mets, nothing. And you know, my brother, my sibling, I only got one brother, and what am I doing? I'm rooting against the team that he lives and dies with. Lee, that shows a very infantile Very infantile character by me, doesn't it, Lee? Doesn't it?
Oh, I don't know about that, but here's something I do know, and I quite literally read this on Twitter just now, Ira. I found the perfect job for you. Perfect job to boost your income. Perfect job.
Well, wait a minute. Isbitz is keeping me in clover over here. I don't need any. I don't need any extra shekels. I got Isbitz.
Well, you're the sage of Tampa Bay sports, so this is right up your alley. I can't think of a better person. Forget Jack Harris. Forget Jane Kaftor. This is right up your alley. Tampa International Airport is looking for a new voice of the airport. You know, when you get on those shuttles, when you go to the terminal, welcome to Tampa. That's you, Ira. Your voice is Tampa. Your voice is Tampa. You can greet visitors to the area. You're not in Brooklyn. You're in Tampa Bay. I'm Ira Kaufman, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. Welcome to Tampa Bay.
You make a lot of sense, Lee. Steve, can you make a couple of phone calls?
Ira, if there's one thing you don't sound like, it's Tampa.
He's the sage of Tampa Bay sports.
Tampa by way of Bensonhurst, Steve. Does that work?
I mean, think about that. You get on the shuttle and you hear Ira's voice. It's a welcoming voice, a soothing voice.
They get to the end, they take the shuttle back, and they get the hell out of town. That's what they do.
Yeah, years ago it was Bob Height on that shuttle, the voice of Bob Height, former WFLA top anchor, and I'll make a couple of calls for you. All right, Sage, 4 days of OTAs, spring practices are in the books. 50% have been open to media. Sage has been patrolling around there, listening, catching all the vibes, doing what you do. And last week it was Baker Mayfield who got to speak to the media. Today it was Kyle Trask on the quarterback front. A couple of questions for you, Ira. First, your impressions. And I ask you that because Todd Bowles himself said, you know, how the guys rally around the quarterback and which quarterback can galvanize the team is part of the process in choosing a quarterback in this competition. So in theory, how Trask conducts himself is important. So I'm curious if you think he looks like a starting quarterback and spoke like one and just gave the feelings that you were looking for. And part two of that is Trask was on radio and he said that he has no knowledge of the Bucs being discounted in the national media. He said, quote, "I guess I kind of live under rocks," and says he has no idea. I don't believe him, but your take on all of that.
Steve, what I like about Trask's personality, or the way he came across, at least today, at OTAs, you know, he's accepting the challenge. Lee and I are not about to go up to Kyle Trask and say, "We think you got to outplay Baker Mayfield by a wide margin or you're not getting that job." We're not going to say that, even if we do believe it. But Trask can't afford to think like that. He can't. He has to feel that this is a legitimate competition. And I think to some extent it is. If he looks like the better player, I think Bowles will go with him. I do. But he's going to have to win the job. I like his confidence. He feels that he's the right man for the job. I asked him about 2 years under Brady. What did he learn from him? Just about the way Brady went about his business. Has to help him in his development. Steve, I like the way he came across today. Confident, not quite as confident as Baker Mayfield, but that's okay. He hasn't done a thing in this league, and Mayfield has. It's understandable. He's not the number one pick in the draft. Understandable. But I was kind of impressed with Kyle Trask today, Lee, but he's got his work cut out. He's got a tough mountain to climb there.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a mountain. It's not like Mayfield's looking like Brady out there. I'm not saying Mayfield looks bad. It's just, you know, I don't care what team you are. No Tom Brady, you're going to take a step down at quarterback. It's just that simple. Today was probably the best practice I've seen of Kyle Trask. Now, I'm not trying to say, you know, I think he could go out there and light up the Vikings for 400 yards. But slow down here. What I liked about what I saw from Trask today, you know, there was nothing flashy, nothing spectacular, but he was just solid. If someone wants to put words in my mouth and say game manager, okay. But I didn't see him make mistakes today. Just had a solid practice. And as the kids would say, Ira, I think he was feeling it. You know, from our perspective, media perspective, the most important trait anybody can have, especially quarterback, is a personality. And Trask really has never demonstrated he's got any kind of personality. That's not, I'm not being negative. I'm just saying that, you know, he's kind of a aw shucks, yes sir, no sir kind of guy, quiet dude. He wouldn't even know he's there unless you saw him. But today, he had a nice practice, had a good practice, and you could tell there was an air of satisfaction about him. He had a personality today. He was smiling. He was joking a little bit. It was a different Kyle Trask, and I think there was a direct correlation there that he had a solid practice. He knew he had a solid practice, and he was sort of having fun with us today, and that was refreshing.
You know, Steve, the bitter truth, I think you could argue this, and I don't think it's necessarily a stretch. Steve, look at it like this. If he doesn't beat out Mayfield this year or get to show something this year, I don't think he'll ever be the quarterback of the Bucs, because either Mayfield will play well, like Lee says, or they'll go get another quarterback in 24. This is it for Trask. It's not like he can lose the battle for Mayfield and then get it back, you know, in 24 training camp. That's not going to happen. It's a grand opportunity, Steve, when you consider that for 2 years he certainly had zero chance to, you know, to get any substantive reps behind Brady, and everybody understands that. Steve, this is his shot, and it's going to be his only shot as a Buccaneer, I think.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, Ira, but there's a couple of ways to look at it. I mean, Mayfield has been banged up the last couple of seasons. Not a lot last year, but a little bit, and of course in Cleveland the year before, hurt. So, you know, I don't know. He may get a chance to play. And we haven't seen, you know, we saw Tom Brady be extremely durable, but your premise is right on. I mean, if Mayfield plays well, he's not going to be the guy. And if Mayfield doesn't play well, then, you know, we know there's going to be massive changes here with the Bucs, and that's kind of the end for Kyle Trask in Tampa, or at least with a shot to be a starter. But there's one thing from Lee, Ira, that you sort of ignored, and I was surprised. Lee said that, you know, hey, when you step down from Tom Brady, without question, you're going to see a drop-off at the quarterback position. Now, you just wrote a whole column saying that, hey, man, maybe not. You know, the Bucs average 18 points a game. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks that can give you 18 points a game out there. So I'm curious what you think about what Lee said there and your perspective on that.
You know me. I was waiting for you to pick up on that. And I heard Lee say it. And that is the common wisdom, you know, that you got to take a step down when Brady's no longer your quarterback. Normally, that would absolutely be a true statement. But last year was anything but normal. Brady went 8-9. It was him. He started every game. He took every snap except one, I believe, was a halfback option pass or something. Every snap. And they went 8-9, Lee. That's the facts. You can blame Leftwich all you want. Blame Luke Goedeke all you want. But he had the keys to the offense. And you can't argue, Lee. I think it's crazy to argue that Brady didn't have any effect on the game plan, the way the offense was built, and the philosophy. You can't say Leftwich didn't lean on Brady, didn't want to talk to Brady about it. I mean, that's cutting his own throat. So, to Steve's point, Lee, I said that if Mayfield has a year like Mayfield had in 2020, when he was a darn productive quarterback, and the Browns were a pretty darn good team, that there may not be a drop-off under center. Now, for that to happen, Mayfield's got to get the job done, Lee, and we don't know if he can. And you guys have written a bunch of stories saying Vegas and this, you know, national pundit, they're all down on Baker Mayfield. A lot of people are, Lee. They don't have a lot of faith in him. They don't. But I don't think it's crazy to think that Mayfield can have a good season. They still got Evans. They still got Godwin. Let's not forget that. And if Mike Evans can go 11 games, Lee, without a touchdown, with Tom Brady under center, how much worse could Mayfield do? I mean, that's shocking. So I guess what I'm saying is Brady was mediocre for most of last season. I think Mayfield could be better than that.
I think you're falling into a couple of traps, Tyler. One of those traps is you're equating the win-loss record from quarterback play. Now, you got to remember, now you had a statement that Brady had the keys to the offense. I don't know if that's accurate. And the reason why I say that is we all remember the Cleveland debacle, that Brady was marching that team late in the game, and Bowles quite literally took the ball out of his hands. They wind up going to overtime. They lost in overtime. So just that game right there, if Bowles just steps aside, they could have easily won that. And then you know, you can't say Brady was terrible because he had a losing record. They would have had a winning record. I'm not for sure Brady had the keys to the offense. If he did, he would have told Bulls to step up, you know, back off. We're going to win this game. That's number one. Number two, you know, I read in a column the other day that the Bucks could upgrade at quarterback, and I'm like, is Ira watching a different game I'm watching? And I checked out Mayfield's stats and Brady's stats. For Mayfield to match what Brady did last year, Mayfield would have to have a career year.
Well, I think he's got better weapons, Steve, than he had in Cleveland. Not the same running game, which is important. They had a very robust running game. Steve, my main point, how could you suggest that Brady didn't have a huge influence on the offensive philosophy of the Buccaneers? Steve, that doesn't make sense to me. How could Byron Leftwich not incorporate Brady's ideas to a great extent? I don't buy that.
You know, I've watched that Cleveland game a few times to try to understand what was going on there. And, you know, you look at that game, you know, Lee brought it up, and it's a good turning point there. I mean, Brady wasn't playing that great. He wasn't playing terrible. He wasn't making mistakes. But they still only had 17 points. And then when he did get the ball in overtime, it was check down, check down, check down, check down, check down, check down. I think he threw like 10 nothing short passes, and then they punted. There's a weirdness in there of all this, and then the Bucks got the ball back, and Brady couldn't drive the team in that game, and they lost. I'm not saying Bulls did the right thing, but you know, it's very very much mysterious when you think about, hey, how come Tom Brady didn't put his foot down and say, hey, Todd, come in here. This is all messed up. Byron's a clown. It makes you really think that Brady had a heavy hand in this. You know, obviously Todd Bowles' hand was a little soft, and Leftwich, you know, got lost in not knowing how to fix it. I don't know, Ira, but I agree with you on the front that, hey, if you're going to not throw a lot of touchdowns to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, which they didn't, and those guys were largely healthy and caught close to 190 balls, you know, you could find other quarterbacks to do that.
Lee, maybe it speaks to that Brady wasn't totally invested and didn't go out of his way to, you know, grab Leftwich by the collar midway through the season and say, what you're doing isn't working. Wouldn't the old Tom Brady have done that, Lee?
You know, you make a fair point, and I sort of wrote a story about this. You know, Dana White did another interview with TMZ, and he once again brought up that he had brokered a deal with Mark Davis to bring Brady to Las Vegas, and Chucky blew it up. And he talked about how pissed off he and Brady were about it. We know Brady flirted with San Francisco. We know for a fact he flirted with Miami. You know, different timelines. And Dana White's now blabbing all over the place about, you know, he tried to get Brady to Vegas. How loyal was he to the Bucs?
Yeah, I mean, Steve, not only that, but in his third year as a Buccaneer, weird things were happening around Tom Brady the whole year, starting with the retirement and the reinstatement, the crazy 10 days in training camp, which is still largely unexplained, although I think a lot of people know exactly what happened, but nobody's really written it. What the heck did he do in those 10 days? Well, where was he?
Ira, but before you move on, it is a wacky situation because the reality is he got divorced. So he didn't not play, I think, because his wife told him not to. And she says, that's absolutely ridiculous. I never told him not to play. And I sort of believe that he made that decision himself. So I don't know why.
I mean, how many players get divorced in a year? Shoot, Josh Allen just broke up with his girlfriend. Do we expect Josh Allen to have a losing record this year? I mean, come on.
Well, wait a minute, Lee. You mean she's on the market? Lee, you can move right in there. You can make them.
Lee, actually, if you do need a little help with that, you could pick up a used Mustang Roush at Bill Curry Ford. BillCurryFord.com. You know, you step up your outing game a little bit there.
I saw it in the showroom today, Steve. Beautiful, beautiful.
The new ones are nice, but you can get one pre-owned. Of course, a huge selection, BillCurryFord.com.
Steve, I still can't get over the 10 days of training camp. I mean, I still, it's something about it. I don't remember anything like that ever happening. I just don't. Where it's not, it's a non-injury situation. It's not a health concern that we know about. And this is your starting quarterback, and he leaves in the middle of camp? I don't care if he told Bowles in May that he was going to miss 10 days. Who does that? Steve, it's kind of unprecedented.
All right, I got to ask you about this. Todd Bowles, he had a fun one when he was talking about things that will determine who wins the quarterback battle. One of my favorites was, who's ready to play the first game? Like, okay, that's pretty basic. That's pretty basic. But one of them was this, Ira. Got to ask you what you think about this. Quote, it's not necessarily making the big play, but the right play. Would Bruce Arians ever say that?
No. No. He would. Arians wanted the right play, but the right play is usually the big play in Arians' mind. And Lee, we have to go back to it. It was a shocking moment when Bowles said, I guess he was tired of dancing around the subject. And when he said that they were concerned that Brady might throw an interception in overtime, I mean, Lee, nobody says that. That was a shocker. It was a peek into the mindset of the organization. And I hope Bowles loosens up about that. Now, he doesn't have Brady this year. So if you're saying that about Brady, you can certainly say it about Baker Mayfield, Steve.
Yeah, exactly.
But I hope he learned a lesson from the past 4 years that sometimes you got to take a shot. And the Bucs didn't do that. They didn't do it last year. Ironically, Steve, the one game that they did do it was the Carolina game. The biggest game of the year, Evans caught 3 long touchdown passes. We hadn't seen that. We hadn't seen Evans. And they weren't they weren't 3-yard, little red zone flips. They were long. And I don't know if Carolina was playing a certain kind of defense or what Brady said, the hell with it. I'm doing this my way. But that's the one game that was the outlier, Steve, was the Carolina game.
Sage, you and Lee were out at practice. What really grabbed you, Lee, out there, if anything? If anything at all, what would you want to tell the average Joe in a bar who says, hey, what'd you see out there that...
It was a really nondescript practice. I guess the biggest thing, a takeaway I got out of it, was Russell Gage being on the shelf, broken record, and Mike Evans not being at practice today. This Trey Palmer guy is getting a lot of snaps with the first team. A lot of snaps. And I think the door is wide open for him to supplant, as Ira might say, supplant Gage. I know it's way early. I know it's underwear football. And when it comes to wide receivers, your best bet is to not get excited. But I think the opportunity for Trey Palmer is there. If he can produce it on the practice field, I think he's got a shot at supplanting Russell Gage. Because Russell Gage, again, he's hurt. He's always hurt. And it would not shock me if this continues like last year with Russell Gage and he gets cut.
It's not a stretch to think that this Palmer kid has a heck of an opportunity in front of him, Steve, for one basic reason. He brings a trait that is desperately needed, and that is speed. That is the ability to stretch defenses. I mean, God bless Godwin and Evans. They're outstanding, arguably the best tandem in football, arguably. But, Steve, they're not particularly fast. Mike Evans is not a burner, not necessarily. You know, he makes his catches with his physicality, his catch radius, his leaping ability, his height. Godwin, smooth route runner, really good hands, can find the open spots. This kid's got a chance. He can stretch the field. I think that's a welcome asset for Canales in his first year as offensive coordinator. I think he's got a shot. Steve, for me, one of my takeaways from OTAs today was, and I've seen this time and again, and so has Lee, one of our favorite guys is Winfield. The guy has a fantastic outlook on football. He's always upbeat. He's confident in himself, which I love. And I asked him about coming up with more picks as a secondary. It was unacceptable, that number last year, and Bowles knows it. And I'm sure Bowles talks to these guys every freaking day about it. Get your hands on more footballs. And, Lee, you were there. To hear Winfield talk about going back to playing center field, he can't wait, Steve. This is a big positive as far as Winfield's concerned. I don't think he was necessarily totally comfortable in the role that Bowles gave him last year. And as a result, they're going to make a change. They're going to bring him back to a more of a center field position. And I'm looking for big things from Winfield. Steve, it wouldn't shock me if he's as good a safety as there is in the NFL this fall. It wouldn't shock me.
Warren Sharp had wrote, or one of the guys at his outfit wrote, that decent defenses or good defenses that do not force a lot of turnovers have a shot to become dominant if the next year they do start to force turnovers. They could have been, in my eyes, they could have been writing about the Bucks. They didn't mention the Bucks. You know, I'm not saying the Bucks had a dominant defense last year. They had a decent defense, maybe a good defense until the last few weeks of the season, but they didn't get any turnovers. So I think Bowles is thinking, if they could just somehow get turnovers, this could be a dominant defense.
I think that's a very, very critical point. And I like the way Sharp is looking at it. We all know every coach that's ever, you know, been in the National Football League, the mantra, the key metric for success is turnover differential. Everybody says it. From Paul Brown to Parcells and Joe Gibbs and Bill Walsh and whoever, to Andy Reid and Belichick. Turnover differential, number one metric in determining wins and losses. It's always been like that, Steve. It never changes. The bottom eight teams in turnover differential, you might have one playoff team. The top 10 teams, you probably got seven or eight playoff teams. And I love Sharp's point because, Steve, I've been looking at it. That's a statistic that can vary wildly from year to year, even with the same basic personnel from year to year. It's not something you can always count on, Steve. Last year, the Bucks, in terms of takeaways, were poor. And Bowles, you know, that's where he makes his living, forcing turnovers. They didn't do a good job on it. Other than that, you know, you've heard me talk about the defense, Steve. You've talked about it for about 10 weeks. They were stout, but they weren't great because they weren't forcing turnovers. So, Steve, that's an important point by Warren Sharp. It is not something that is consistent from year to year, not normally. Very rarely do the same teams finish in the top five and the bottom five. It varies markedly from year to year.
It does shift around. It's one of the many indicators, you know, score 30 points a game and you're going to be in the playoffs. That's another indicator, almost like 90-something percent of the time offense wins games. And there are other ones out there, but one of the fun stats from last year and one of the ones that I think gets overlooked a lot is the Saints were second to last in the NFL in turnovers. I'm not sure what's going to clean that up, if Derek Carr is the only one who's going to clean that up, but the turnover differential was poor with them, even though they had a good defense. So just something to file in the back of your head, Sage.
Steve, speaking of the Saints, Dennis Allen, Steve, issues the invitation to John Gruden, likely through the suggestion from Derek Carr himself, talking to his coach, Dennis Allen, making the case of, hey, let's bring Gruden in. I think he can give us some fresh ideas. I've had success with this guy. So, Steve, Gruden shows up. That doesn't mean he's on the Saints' payroll. He's not an NFL employee. Doesn't mean he's going to be involved with the Saints when the season starts. But, Steve, you know, you never know. We might look back at this 5 years from now. Goodell's gone. There's a new commissioner. People forget over time. And maybe, just maybe, this is the beginning of John Gruden's rehabilitation. I'm not saying it's a likely scenario, Steve, but you never know. As the years go by, things can change. That doesn't mean I think he's going up in the Ring of Honor. I don't. I don't think he's ever getting back in the Ring of Honor. Maybe he can get a job in the NFL.
Sage, I think you're missing the home run shot here. My question to you is John Gruden the coach of the Saints next year? Dennis Allen stinks as a head coach. Everybody knows that. They're locked into Derek Carr. And if the defense looks pretty good and the offense struggles again, it's set up now for Gruden to walk in there and to settle with the NFL, his lawsuit, where he's won some stages of it, and say, look, I'll drop this. You just let me back in the game. Saints want to hire me. Everybody's good. I'll say I'm sorry and we're out of here. Do you think that's plausible?
Very, very interesting, Steve. Very interesting. With the lawsuit being the point of leverage, which I think Gruden's got a good chance to win that. Lee, I don't think that's ever going to trial. I think that's going to get settled. The NFL doesn't want to get involved in that and have people testify. And I think it would be proven that Gruden was, in some respect, a fall guy. I mean, I don't want to build Gruden up as a saint. He wrote what he wrote, but he was not an NFL employee, Lee, at the time. They were private emails.
Sage, let me quote one of the emails there. which was Gruden, you know, quote, called Roger Goodell in one of these emails a clueless anti-football pussy. So obviously, obviously Goodell isn't a big fan, but like you said, Goodell's eventually going to be out. And maybe Goodell would love to be like, hey, you know what, John, give up the $40 million, $50 million that would have been coming to you in a settlement, and we'll call it even.
That's a very interesting way to look at it, Steve. That's why you are who you are. Lee, you think Gisbert's making any sense here?
Yeah, it makes some sense. But here's what I wrote about this, Ira, indirectly. And I spoke about this a little bit earlier. You know, when Dana White was once again whining about how Gruden allegedly blew up the deal to bring Brady to Vegas. If that's true, I think you can make a very good argument that without Chucky, the Bucs are still looking for their first Super Bowl.
Man, if that story's true, Lee, and we don't know that it is, we don't. Steve, you know, one interesting facet of your scenario, which I don't think's crazy, you have to think about it. Those last, you know, the last years with the Bucs and then his years with the Raiders. Lee, is Gruden still considered coaching gold in NFL circles, or has he lost his luster, Lee?
Oh, he's lost his luster, no question about it. I think more people think of him as an analyst than they do a coach. He leaves the Raiders. A special teams coach takes over. One of their wide receivers kills a woman and damn near killed himself. Killed his career for sure. They wind up in the playoffs.
And Steve, you know, he's got a lousy record of drafting. When he's heavily involved in the draft, it hasn't worked out, Steve. It hasn't.
Well, I mean, he took over a terrible Raiders team, flipped the roster and all that, and he went 7-9, 8-8. They got off to a good start in 2021, and he got fired.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's gold anymore, but I don't think he's people look at him as trash. And you know how desperate owners get. And I think the Saints are a good fit for him in their own way, because they sort of have a rebel kind of way with them. And Gruden would love to be in the NFC South and go up against the Bucs and try to stick it to them. And Saints don't have an issue selling tickets. They're a very established franchise, and they've taken the chance on guys before. You know, they also didn't have any problem bringing in Jameis Winston and his baggage, which, of course, is different than Gruden's, but it's still high-profile ugliness in the world, in the eyes of the NFL.
And Steve, you wouldn't mind sticking it to Rich McKay in Atlanta at the same time, right?
There you go. It's perfect for him. It's perfect. So that was my first thought, is like, oh my gosh, he's going to be coaching the Saints next year. And you know how charismatic he is. I'm sure he got to meet everybody, and you know, and he'll probably be in touch all season long. And Ira, look, you know John Gruden, and you know that Derek Carr has been vocal ever since Gruden was fired. He was happy to say openly, yeah, we're close, and we, you know, we stay in contact. And as long as Carr is the quarterback, then I think there's a pretty good shot at it anyway. And of course, there's a connection between Sean Payton and John Gruden, if I remember correctly.
I believe that's right. Lee, I still can't wrap my mind around this. I'm the only one who brings this up. You know, everybody else say it's history, but I still can't get over this Jameis Winston wanting to stay in New Orleans. I mean, I just can't believe this guy, he's not injured anymore. He's not 33 years old. He's done some things in the league. And the guy wants to be a backup to a guy that never gets hurt. Lee, that's the best job for Jameis Winston. He didn't have any options. Nobody wanted him, even as a backup. I just can't get over it, Lee. I mean, the Saints basically gave up on a guy last year. When he got back to health, they stuck with Andy Dalton. Lee, I don't get it. Why would Winston want to be a Saint? I don't get it.
I think his agent knows that he's untouchable. I don't know if that's the right word, but he's got a history with women, and it's not good. And, you know, look at the times we live in. Teams are scared to take a chance on someone like that. So he probably thought, you know, the Saints wanted to keep him, albeit as a backup. And he lives not too far from New Orleans. He's from Alabama, from Birmingham. Hey, and it's safe. He knows he has a job. He goes on the open market. Maybe doesn't get a bite from anybody. I believe that is hindering his career advancement more than interceptions.
I think you're well thought out there, Lee. I think that's got to be it. Because, Steve, you look at some of the backups around the league. I mean, you could do a hell of a lot worse than Jameis Winston. The guy can come in and win you some games.
It's a very unique situation where, like you said, Ira, they gave up on Jameis as their starting quarterback. He hits free agency and they say, hey, well, come on back. And meanwhile, he was the guy. So it speaks to also how well Jameis was liked and respected, where they also felt that he could handle being the guy, then getting demoted and still being with the same head coach as the backup. I mean, not every ego in the NFL could handle that.
See, he did have to restructure his contract significantly.
Sure. You'd be hard-pressed in NFL history to find a situation like that for a young guy who certainly could have latched on as a backup somewhere else on some level. But, you know, it's something to consider. I just wanted to clarify what I said about Gruden and Sean Payton. I had to look it up because I knew it was there. I just didn't remember. Sean Payton, who obviously is royalty in New Orleans, was Gruden's quarterback's coach with the Eagles when Gruden was the young offensive guru there, and Gruden is one of Peyton's mentors. So just, you know, an interesting connection, further connection with New Orleans.
Steve, correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm a little unsure about Duck. Was Winston a free agent, or was he under contract with one more year with the Saints this spring? Was he a free agent? I don't remember.
I think they had to, I believe he was under contract, but it wasn't a contract. I mean, both sides knew they weren't going to pay him what he was due. So it was one of those like, hey, we got to either work it out or you got to walk. So they worked it out. So yeah, not really, not truly a free agent, but he would have hit the market, obviously, if he said, no, I want to hit the market. So I'm going to call him a free agent. Hey, Ira, I got to ask you this, because this is about media and it's certainly unique. And the Sage is going to have a great, great commentary on this, I'm sure. But first, a reminder, Sage, disaster strikes on your property, you call Florida's Elite Restoration immediately. 24/7, they've got a great crew, locally owned, serving the Tampa Bay area completely. And Josh Martin and his team have all the experience on the insurance side of the business. So that means they know how to protect you and eventually get the money that's coming to you to make your property right after that flood, fire, mold, storm damage, whatever it may be.
Florida's Elite Restoration.com. Call Josh and his people and do it today.
So, Ira, I was saving this for a long time. Ali Marpet appeared on something called the Beer Money Podcast, which is just this little nothing podcast that's hosted by a guy who played football with Marpet and a couple of other guys who went to Hobart. So they're buddies. I mean, on the podcast, they're talking about texting each other during the season and all this other stuff. So he basically did his friends a favor, went on this podcast months ago. I don't know, maybe 50 people listened, but I've been saving it for a while. And one of the things that Marpet said, he was asked about the media. And Marpet, not a big fan of the media, Ira. Not a big fan of the media. He said he didn't like how he would be trying to change his clothes and there'd be media next to him and these, and it's like, come on, what are you doing? And he's like, you know, he didn't like that. He apparently had some clothes changing issues with the media. But he said that the media totally overblows distractions. The whole line of questioning on distractions, he called it a trope. He called it a trope. And, you know, I'm not going to quote him here endlessly here, but he basically didn't like that at all. And it got me thinking, like, well, okay, if there's no distractions on these things, then why wasn't Marpet and other people more open about Jameis and other things going on? If it's not a distraction, just talk about it and it's done. If you don't talk about it, you perpetuate the distraction. But the Bucs also stunk during that time. You know, they go on Hard Knocks and they can't play and there's all kinds of things going on. So if distractions weren't an issue, is Marpet trying to tell us that, well, we were just a bad team? I don't know. What do you think of those things he was saying?
Well, I'm trying to not take his comments personally because, you know, Lee and I worked that locker room extensively, you know, during the week, especially on Wednesdays. And Lee, I think you'd agree, Marpet was one of our main guys for me and you. We tended to drift towards DeMar Dotson, Marpet. Not Donovan Smith so much, but Marpet's a smart guy, Lee. Not a bad quote if you can get him going. So I was around the guy quite a bit post-game, especially after a loss, and they lost a lot of games, Lee. You need a guy, you know, you need a go-to guy like a Cameron Brate, a Marpet, a Levante David, somebody that knows you got a job to do and is willing to talk to you without an attitude. But I did notice, Lee, about Marpet that when we bring certain subjects up, he would be the type to say, no, we don't think about things like that. We're all about football. Meanwhile, they're losing losing 31-14. You know, they're all about football. And by the way, Lee, speaking of that, only Izbits can find a podcast among a bunch of guys from Hobart College. Only Izbits could do that. And if Steve didn't find it, you would have found it. Lee, maybe you found it at the same time. I always enjoyed being in Marpet's company.
Did you ever try Ira, did you ever try in his underwear or something? I'm just trying to figure out what he's upset about.
No, I don't get that one, Steve, but I would see his parents in the tailgate, you know, in the parking lot, maybe on a road game. You know, his father was a character, is a character. So, I don't know. It's going to take a lot for Marpet to change my mind about him as one of my favorite Bucks. Thought he was very accommodating. And he would see me start walking down that carpet at the corner of his eye, Steve. I can see it now. And it's like, geez, here we go. And because he knew I was a digger, Steve. I was a digger. I wasn't there to ask him what his favorite, you know, TV show was. I want to know why they can't run the football. And he knew that. So I got, you're not getting anything bad from me on Ali Marpet.
Here's my take real quick. You know, I don't disagree with anything Marpet said. The reason why distractions are a trope, he's not wrong, but the reason why that's a trope, guess who perpetuates it? Every year, every week of the season, guess who perpetuates that trope? Coaches. They are so flippin' paranoid, it is utterly ridiculous. I mean, the Manhattan Project had less classified information than an NFL coach. These guys are so freaking paranoid, it just blows my mind. So, Ali Marpet's right, but the core issue is the freaking coaches. Who's been saying for years, distractions are nonsense? Who's been saying that? This guy. My high school coach told me, distractions are distractions if you let them be distractions. And I learned in high school, you don't pay attention to it. The only thing you pay attention to is the game. That's it. And I learned that in high school. And so I've been saying that forever. And now we got an all-pro lineman coming out and saying it's a trope. He's not wrong, but the culprit is the coaches.
Lee, Gruden was masterful at it because every time we'd bring something up that seemed to be an issue, you know, in the locker room or something. And Steve, you've heard him say it. He would call it elevator music. It's elevator music. You know, we don't pay any attention to it. And Lee, along those lines, and I don't know.
But it's a lie, Ira. It was a lie. Gruden, we know that Gruden was obsessed with what Steve Dumig was saying. I mean, I could tell you stories that Dumig shared and other things. I mean, and that coaches had told me. I mean, Gruden paid attention to the media. Bruce Arians paid crazy attention to the media. Dirk Cutter. I mean, those guys remember more what's on Joe Buck's fan than I do sometimes.
You're absolutely right. And I've had at least five coaches, maybe more. Basically, every coach I've ever covered, whether it was the New York Giants or the Buccaneers, Lee, almost to a man, they say they don't read what people are writing about the team. And you know what? To Steve's point, Lee, it's all a lie. It's all a lie.
I remember getting text messages from Cutter at 11 o'clock at night. On the site, so, you know.
A lot of text.
And it was a nasty text. It's actually, I'm still indebted to some of the things that Cutter would text me. He goes, hey, this isn't right. And I said, I'll write a retraction. He's like, I don't want a retraction. I was going to make sure you're on the right track, that you're not wrong. Just stuff like that I will forever appreciate Dirk Cutter.
He's a decent man. He's a decent
good
man.
Hey, Sage, just a couple of nuggets before we get out of here, tied to Marpet with some of the silliness there. So in the same sentence, or in the same chatter, he goes on to say that that Antonio Brown, everybody on the team, when it went sour, everybody on the team knew that he didn't want to be there. So it's like, well, if that's not a distraction, I don't know what is. When you got a guy who's just, you know, the whole team knows that he doesn't want to be playing on the team anymore, that's got to be a little bit of a distraction. And obviously it turned into an epic meltdown.
Yeah, I mean, that's like saying Keyshawn Johnson wasn't a distraction in 2003. Of course he was.
And even more fun was they asked Marpet, hey, who would you give the Buccaneers tight ass award to? That's what they called it, the tight ass award. Meaning who's the guy who was, you know, not having any fun and was sort of policing the locker room and, and that guy. And Marpet thought for a minute. He's like, I'm going to give it to myself. And he said part of it was because I was the NFL PA rep for a while. I was on the lookout. And what was Marpet's quote as an example that he used to say to guys? Quote, we shouldn't be doing that, Jameis.
I mean, that's what a parent says to a toddler.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, and last thing they asked him, Ira, they asked him who was the most locked-in, focused Buccaneer that he ever played with. And he didn't say Brady. He said Ndamukong Suh. He said that he just had a low-key, constant fire about him, that as a player, he was always an asshole. This is Marpet's chatter. And he said he was very consistent. He's, quote, he had a consistent asshole about him, laser-focused and angry on the field. And, you know, interesting there.
You know, speaking of Sue, Lee, I don't want to overhype this, but they missed him last year, Lee. They missed him.
Yeah, it was a calculated gamble that they took. You know, they thought they could get more of a pass rush, and I think the entire defense suffered.
Sage, our thanks to Big Storm Brewery. Big Storm Brewery. Next podcast, I'm going to mention some of the awards that they've won in the last 6 weeks. They've been racking them up big time. BigStormBrewery.com. Try their vodka sodas. Check out all the live music at the Ybor location. Follow them on social media for the schedule. Big Storm Ybor. And our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration. FloridasElitereStoration.com. Get there. And Bill Curry Ford, the Giant. And that's their nickname, the Giant, BillCurryFord.com. Shop there first. Shop there today. All the June specials are rolling out. BillCurryFord.com. Ira, last thought. Final thought of you can, and keep it to the Bucks. Lately, you've been doing these final thoughts. I ask you for a final thought. You're talking about your shoes. You're talking about all kinds of things, Ira. Yeah, a final thought there from maybe something you heard from Todd Bowles today, a nuance, somebody you talk to on the side. Well, what do we need to know?
Well, I've been thinking about expectations for this team. Now, here's the way I'm looking at it. Say you look at like 2018 or something, or 2016. Expectations were low. The Vegas odds makers, again, didn't put much stock in the Bucks. But Lee, this is different because those teams didn't have any players that had done anything. They hadn't done anything. So what are they supposed to say when people predicted the Bucks were going to go 6-10? All right, well, you know, we got to prove them wrong, but I understand it. I think this is a different situation. A lot of players, core players, have had quite a bit of success over the last 3 years, especially those first 2 years. They have won two straight division titles, no matter what you want to say about the NFC South. And guys like Mike Evans and Levante David and Vita Vea and Carlton Davis and Winfield and Godwin, they've done things in this league. Ryan Jensen, Wirfs. So the low expectations should really piss these guys off. Lee, and I don't believe them when I've asked several of them, well, doesn't this provide motivation or anything? And they always slough it off, Lee. Oh, we don't care what anybody else says. We don't pay attention to any of that. Lee, it's gotta piss these guys off because they're not that far removed from a Super Bowl, and now people are treating them like they're the Cardinals. That's gotta stink.
The sage has spoken. The sage has spoken. Ira, we'll be back with some more fun on the podcast this week. We appreciate everybody listening at JoeBucksFan.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever platform you're at. Subscribe, and that lets you get an alert when the podcast comes, and you can plan around it and settle in with a hot dog like Ira likes to enjoy. All right, we'll see you soon, Sage.